Joining us now is NASA's Susan Bell, and she's from the JPL, or Jet Propulsion Laboratory, in Pasadena, California. And we were just talking about how she likes to share her story of fire and ice. But along with working for NASA, you are also an aerobatic competitor, and you won the sportsman division at the Nationals last year in September, right here in Oshkosh. Congratulations.
Oh, I did. Thank you so much. Yeah. It was actually very exciting to have Nationals here and get to fly aerobatics over Oshkosh, not being an air show pilot. So I had a lot of fun.
Good. Well, we'll talk a little bit about that first, but let's talk business first.
Yes.
With NASA, and you are part of the Airborne Science Program, and as you said, fire and ice.
Yes.
What is the Airborne Science Program?
All right, so NASA actually has a very robust Airborne Science Program. We have aircraft ranging from small, King Airs and Gulfstreams to a DC-8 flying laboratory that can hold 40 scientists and goes all over the world, to our high-flying ER-2s, which are civilian versions of the U-2 spy plane. But they're science planes for us. And the airborne science, we tend to do things like look at regional studies, and that's where the fire and ice comes in. So we actually have just launched out on a mission. It's a joint NASA-NOAA mission that's going to be looking at the wildfires in the western United States and their impact on air quality. Because the air quality is getting so poor when we have these massive wildfires out there that it's affecting communities' health, it's affecting, visibility in the air, and of course, eventually, weather and climate. And after they go look at those wildfires in the West, they're actually going to move to Kansas and then look at agricultural burning in the Southeast.
Okay.
Neat mission.
Wow. And it's kind of timely. We were talking about that a few weeks ago. We woke up in the morning here and everything smelled like a campfire. We thought, well, what's going on? And it turns out the wildfires in Canada, the winds were blowing.
Yes.
And it really does impact. It was just the smell in the air, but I can imagine from some of the more larger wildfires, putting that much ash and smoke into the air can't really impact the environment.
Oh, yes. And there's actually a lot of studies at NASA now, also satellite missions as well, that are looking at air quality and their impact on human health, because pollution in the air causes heart and lung disease.
Right.
So it's a very important thing to study. And then I'll jump over to the ice side because I was like fire and ice. So we actually have multiple missions flying aircraft over the poles as well as over mountain snowpack. I fly on a mission called Airborne Snow Observatory, which monitors California snowpack with the state of California. And we measure the depth of the snow, measure the brightness of the snow, and we give that information to water managers so they can understand the snow melt coming down to reservoirs to help in times of drought.
It's amazing. I think folks think of NASA as only space travel, mm-hmm. but there is another component to it that's aeronautics and space.
Yes.
So, and that's where this comes in. Now, you mentioned satellites as well. Mm-hmm. How do you deploy those, or where are those deployed?
So most of our Earth science missions, and that's the field I work in, actually launch from Vandenberg Air Force Base out in California. Most Earth science missions tend to be polar orbiting, so they go north to south, so they cover the whole Earth. So that's where we launch those. And we actually, I think the current count is about 22 missions up in space, studying everything from soil moisture to that air pollution, to our ocean and the sea level rise that's happening right now. But it's really neat because the Airborne Science Program actually helps develop and test instruments that will eventually be in space. So that's actually part of the tie-in and why NASA does it.
Okay. So when we're looking at a clear sky on a moonless night, and we see a satellite going from north to south, it's one of yours?
It could be. We have about 22 missions. There's a lot of other. There's about over 1,000 satellites up in space right now. But, you can wave at it and pretend it's helping your daily life, I like to say. And that's actually personally why I like working in the field of Earth science, is because what we do does impact lives here on Earth. And the other great thing that NASA does in our Earth science field is all the data we collect is available to anyone in the world. We have an open data policy. So if you're in a country and you're having a horrible drought, you can actually go get data from our satellites and then help your own country.
Amazing. Yeah. You mentioned some of the new technology that you're testing. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you can let us in on?
Oh, yes. No, we're very open. We're not secretive. So a really neat technology that we've been actually testing for over a decade is something called synthetic aperture radar. And it's a side-looking radar. And when you do multiple passes, you can see changes in the Earth's crust. So we have different bands. So we can see, say, a monitor earthquake faults in California, volcanic eruptions. We actually took it out to the Kilauea eruption last year. We can also deploy that mission to disaster areas such as the flooding after Hurricane Florence in the Carolinas. We went out there. That technology is actually going to be launched into space in 2022, and it's based on actual technology that flew on the space shuttle over two decades ago. But we have a huge mission coming up called NISAR, which is the NASA ISRO, and that's the Indian Space Agency Synthetic Aperture Radar. It's our first NASA mission with India. We're very excited about it. And this SAR radar, this up in space, is going to be able to do that all over the world. So you don't have to fly an airplane. We can do all this research all over the world. So it's going to be great.
Are there any other programs such as that are on the development?
Let's see. We have on the sea level, on the ocean side, we're developing a different type of another type of radar that's actually called SWOT. It's Surface Water Ocean Topography. We love our acronyms at NASA.
Yes.
No, you can't be at NASA until you have a mind full of acronyms. And it's a radar mission that's going to both look at the sea level in the ocean, but it's going to be the first mission that can also measure lakes and rivers and surface water on land. And some of the applications of that could be, say, if you're having flooding or hurricanes, we can actually then measure the water with a radar.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
And this week, you'll be in the NASA building?
Yes, I'm in NASA exhibit over in Gateway Park. There's a lot of NASA flags. You cannot miss us. Come on over. We're not trying to sell you anything.
Right.
Just come and learn some really awesome science, both earth science, aeronautics, and, of course, our Moon to Mars program in Artemis. We have, you know, people over there.
Excellent. Now, we've got the business out of the way. Now let's go to the fun stuff.
Okay.
How did you get involved in flying?
Oh, in flying in general, it's a funny story. When I was a kid, and this is why I work for NASA, I wanted to be an astronaut. I was like one of those kids that needs to be an astronaut. But I just didn't really know how to do it. I had no one in my family or around me involved in aviation at all. Just did not come from an aviation family. Ended up going into film. And so, again, I kind of worked my way back and started doing communications work for NASA. And I was actually at the time, the Dryden Flight Research Center at Edwards, and they were doing supersonic, this low-boom test. And I realized all astronauts were also pilots. So I thought, you know what? I should go be a pilot. So I actually went and did my private pilot training in 4 months. And then I just was a typical pilot flying around with friends and everything. And, you know, I kind of actually got a little bored with straight and level flight because I didn't have a mission.
Right.
And I went and took emergency maneuver training with spin recoveries and light control failures, and I loved it. I love pointing at the ground and trying to figure out what to do. I wasn't scared of going towards the ground. And my instructor's like, you're a little abnormal. Most pilots do not want to be pointing at the ground straight down. And,
right.
You know, they try to pull up. And within less than three months of actually doing my first spin, I decided I wanted to compete. And I, you know, joined the IAC, flew primary in a plane with a safety pilot my first year, did awful. I was a horrible aerobatic pilot. And then 2 years ago, some people were retiring in my IAC chapter, and there was a extra that came up for sale. And it's a midwing. It's
right.
Pink, white, and blue. It's very girly. I call it Plane Baby. And I bought it, learned how to fly it with some help, and then last year just really worked my butt off. Every weekend I was out there flying, you know, had a coach helping me on the ground perfect things. And so I ended up, flying 8 contests, I believe, last year. And one of them, of course, was Nationals here. It was my first time at Nationals. I had no idea what to expect. And it worked out pretty good. So, oh, yeah.
So as we're putting in a little plug for the IAC, the
yep.
International Aerobatic Club, and a division of EIA, tell us the progression that a competitor goes through from basically starting all the way through.
Okay. So basically, you want to join the IAC and just learn. And I always tell people, go to judges school first to learn how to judge, not to be a judge, but to learn the rules. But you start in the primary division, the first, which is beginners. And it's really funny because you got to learn how to find the box and do your wing wags, and people are flying, you know, half mile away, and it's a hilarious, your first year is really kind of funny. And then you move up to sportsman, which is what I won last year, and then there's the intermediate level, and intermediate, when I'm flying right now, that's added like snap rolls and rolling turns and stuff, so it gets more complicated, more inverted flight. Then you have the advanced level, which gets really more complicated, and then, of course, unlimited. And unlimited is probably flown by just a few dozen pilots in the
right.
country. It is so demanding physically. And then, of course, the IAC, we have two teams. We have the advanced aerobatic team and then the unlimited aerobatic team that represent the U.S. at World Championships. And that is Olympic-level flying.
Right.
So,
And the World Championships are held every other year?
So the advanced team is 1 year, then okay. The unlimited is the next team, so it rotates like that. So I think we're going to be in an advanced selection year this year. And then the unlimited team, a lot of them are actually already over in Europe, or about to be for their championship over there.
Great. So when will you be flying your extra to Oshkosh?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure yet. It is a day and a half trip from Southern California, right, where I live, and there's a lot of weather along the way. Leaving Nationals last year, it took me 2.5 days to get home.
Oh, my.
Yep. So.
But you had a championship in your baggage compartment.
Yes, I did. A big Eagle trophy that I had to try to fit into the plane with me. But it's great. My goal is actually to make one of those U.S. teams and compete at the world level. That's what I want to do, because that, to me, is just the most awesome thing to represent the U.S. At a world competition.
Well, good. Good for you. Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
And I have the feeling we'll be hearing your name more often.
All right. I hope so.
With the teams. Susan Bell is with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and she's here this week. We can see you at the NASA building,
yes,
between 9 and 5 every day. Stop
yes.
in, see them in Gateway Park. Susan, thanks for joining us
thank
this morning.
Thank you so much.
Right. You're listening to From the Stand on EIA Radio.